Look at that. The forces of nature as far as the eye can see. The Grand Canyon. So vast and deep and majestic. Oh, I'm so glad I came here. I've just got to share this with someone. Let me get my phone out. I wonder if there's any service out here on the edge of this natural wonder of the world. Hi. Yeah, I just wanted you to know that I'm looking out over the Grand Canyon and... Oh, well, I guess you kind of have to be here.
Hey, oh, you need the spare car key? It's in that jar, I think.
Hey, what's up? Okay, hold on, I gotta change my fantasy lineup.
Hello?
Yeah, Angry Birds high score.
The Grand Canyon's majesty seems a bit challenged all of a sudden, with a crowd of cell phone users texting their friends, taking sunset selfies, and getting calls from their brokers. It raises the issue of whether the national park's long an escape from 20th century civilization should be an escape also from the 21st century digital universe as well. The National Park Service is wrestling with this issue right now. To Wi-Fi or not to Wi-Fi? Samantha Brown is a host on the Travel Channel who says the answer to that question is not obvious, even for someone who is in love with America's great natural wonders.
I have a lot of confidence in our people who run the national parks to do the right thing and to understand that in certain areas, no, there shouldn't be any cell service. This is not the place where you're going to be checking your emails or, I don't know, selling stocks. But there are certainly those places that you want the community to feel like they're interacting with the park on that level now that most travel experiences are rising to that level. So I'm sure the national parks think, well, we can't be left out of the conversation. We always have to be, even though we are this, you know, natural splendor, also a part of the dialogue that is how people communicate.
So let's talk a little bit about the mission of the U.S. national parks. I mean, originally the whole idea was a wilderness where you could get away from civilization. But the idea of doing that digitally and in online terms is a real challenge for the parks on a couple of levels.
You know, it is. And I understand that they're really trying to meet that demand while still understanding that a lot of people, most people, really just want to go to detox from technology. But you have those people, and I'm one of them, that can't be completely without it because we have kids. When I travel, I'm without my kids most of the time. Or if you're traveling on vacation, you have elderly parents who you need to always check up on. There's a sense of security when you know that all is right in the world beyond where you are.
You know, there's three levels to this, and I wonder if we could explore them separately. The one you've just referred to, and that is you need to be in touch.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that goes for law enforcement and the authorities that are in the park to help protect people as well. But there's also a piece, if you go to Central Park in New York, some of the coolest apps you can get for your cell phone are all about exploring the park in real time using GPS locators and stuff. And then finally, there's the piece of how do you actually negate the online world? Do you have to install jammers in the park to actually create spaces? It's a technological question all on its own. And it's really nuanced because a solution to this is not a plastering signs that say this is a cell phone free zone all over Yosemite, right?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to have the task to do that. But I do feel like that this past summer I was in Yellowstone, and you always know where the animal life is because 40 cars have stopped, pulled over on the side, and everyone has their cameras. And I just have a simple smartphone camera, but there are people with $2,000 lenses, and we're all fixed on the same thing, and that's an eagle, on its nest, absolutely transfixed. And I realized, you know, we take pictures of things in the past as a way to show, hey, we were there. And now technology has made it so we take pictures to say we are here. So we Yelp, we Twitter, we Facebook. But that's been the big change. You take pictures to say, I was there, therefore I'm important. But now it's, I am here. And I'm going to tell my friends. And I'm going to share it on Facebook so they know exactly where I am. And I think the national parks would miss out on some things if they weren't a part of that. But I do know that Acadia National Park in Maine, they had the right idea. They're like, you know what? Who knows how to do this? And who wants this? And it's the younger generation, the 18-year-olds, who are constantly using their smartphones, and they sort of unleashed a group of 18-year-olds saying, explore the park and document what you think is cool. And so then, you know, then you can develop programs around how other people are perceiving your park and what they would like to know. And certainly it's always about bringing that next generation up and to appreciate what we have. And I thought that was a really ingenious way of seeing someone else's perspective of the park and what they would want to know.
You know, you could imagine a Foursquare for rock climbers service where it tell you over here is a really cool view while you're actually experiencing the park. All that technology is possible now.
Sure. And I think Yellowstone has an app that has wildlife sightings. So, you know, if your dream has been to go to Yellowstone and just see a bear, maybe not that close, but, you know, and you find that there are some sightings in this direction, you know, you maybe could go in that direction if that's really what you wanted. And again, there is sort of a cringing just feeling about that, like, oh, you know, so much about being in a national park is just the spontaneity of it all, the serendipity of nature, that sometimes it appears and gives you this gift and sometimes it doesn't. So when it does, it's to be savored. But if there was this one animal that I wanted to see so badly, I would be happy for that sort of a extra bit of technology that allowed me to see it.
So, you know, at the risk of getting a huge number of angry emails by suggesting that, you know, barcode be put on all of the animals in Glacier National Park.
Sure.
On the other side, there's a question of how you can see yourself in the world by standing, you know, next to Niagara Falls or looking out at the Grand Canyon or, you know, seeing the Grand Tetons that is completely independent of a phone or any digital connection. What would you say to people who really need that experience and hope that's going to be available?
Oh, that, you know, they're absolutely right on, and they should have that experience. So if you are on the rim overlooking the Grand Canyon, should there be cell service? No. Should it be in the visitor's center or a lodge? Sure. So hopefully they're looking at those areas to say, this is where you need it. This is where we don't. For me, one of the great things about the Grand Canyon, and I went there on a trip after I had traveled all throughout Europe, actually. I finally got to go to the Grand Canyon. And what struck me was that while I was in Europe, you're just reminded again and again how young as a country America is. You know, you sit in a pub that was, you know, opened in 1492, and you come back to us and you're like, yeah, our Constitution is young. But when you stand on that precipice, looking down into that chasm of Grand Canyon, all you think of is, no, we're billions of years old. We are a country built on just strength and fortitude, and it gives you this feeling of just everything's going to be okay because we're here. And I wouldn't want anybody to have that moment and then hear a cell phone ring. You know, so we need to protect that in the same way we protect our wildlife. It's interesting. We're trying to coexist with nature. Now we're trying to coexist with technology.
The Grand Canyon. Yeah, that's a sound you do not want to hear.
No.
That is for sure. Samantha Brown, host on the Travel Channel. Thanks so much, Samantha.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.